When names like Steve Bannon and Tommy Robinson start talking about Ireland online, it raises a question. Why are international figures so interested in what's happening here in our country? Over the last few months, videos filmed in Ireland, whether it was over the fuel protests or rows over migration, have spread far beyond this country, pushed to millions and millions of their followers overseas. And according to Minister Neil Richmond, what happened around the fuel protests may be a canary in the coal mine, a warning sign of something much, much bigger. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. And look, I think this is something people have probably noticed without even fully realising it. There's a video. It gets taken here in Ireland, it gets posted in Ireland, and suddenly it's everywhere. American podcasters are talking about it. You see it all over your Facebook page. British activists are sharing it. Accounts with sometimes millions of followers are presenting Ireland as proof of some wider political story. The government says that what we've seen recently, particularly around certain protests and migration, should be treated as a warning sign, not because they say that the concerns people are raising aren't real, but because of how quickly those issues can now be pulled into some bigger international machine online. So today we're asking, who's shaping the conversation about this country on the internet? Why are figures overseas suddenly so interested in what happens here? And as Ireland prepares to take on the EU presidency, could it get even louder? And with two by-elections now approaching, are there growing questions about what role these online narratives could play in the elections too? Well, we're joined here in the News Talk Daily studio by Minister of State at the Department of Foreign Affairs, Neil Richmond, and by Aidan O'Brien from the European Digital Media Observatory Ireland. You're both very welcome to the studio. So, Minister, it was you. This was your line. You've described what we saw online as the canary in the coal mine. What exactly are you warning against?
It is very clear that events happen in Ireland, and events happen organically, and there's lots of reasons behind them. And this can be the fuel protests, it can be protests about migration, it can go back to the Dublin City riots. And they are of themselves events that are not organised by any outside forces or orchestrated. They're organic, and this is happens in society. And this is not to cast aspersions or judgment on them, it's just they're a matter of fact. But what we are increasingly seeing is they are being used, and they're being used by outside actors. And you can tell by clearly in the rhetoric. Now, on anecdotal evidence, you'll see the type of phrases and the type of language. I'm probably a little bit, you know, I'm sad to admit it, I'm a bit of a geek when it comes to social media. I've used it since, it's always been there in my political career, since the very start. I had a Bebo page at my first local elections, which isn't today or yesterday. And it's, to me, having an active online presence is no different than having an active canvassing schedule and clinic system. It's just, I'm that generation. And I've seen it creeping steadily because possibly the nature of the work that I've done and where I've inserted myself has generally been quite international, going back to Brexit, European affairs, Ukraine, neutrality, all these issues. It becomes a beacon for outside voices and you begin to recognise them. You know who these people are. You know what the phrases are. You know what the counts are. And then I can see it from an anecdotal point of view, and then it gets backed up by very real statistical and academic research. So within the fuel protests, one thing that really jarred with me very, very quickly is a week or two before my boss in the Department of Foreign Affairs, Helen McEntee, had announced a new funding package for Ukraine. This was part of St. Patrick's Day. She'd visit Kyiv. Minister Thomas Byrne was there as well. And all of a sudden, I started seeing across online and in physical signs in protests and photos from the protests of people saying, why are we wasting money abroad? And this is new. There is fairly strong Irish support for what we're doing in Ukraine. But trying to equate what was happening in terms of people really genuinely struggling with the price of fuel and the price of the cost of living with somehow €40 million towards Ukraine. Now, bear in mind, I'm not going to get into the politics of it. The various package announced come to about €755 million. €40 million would have got you maybe a few days of that package. So that, and they were going like, well, stop giving the money to Ukraine and everything will be okay. And so I dug into this a bit more and who is saying this and why are they saying it? And it is the same sort of actors who question the validity of President Zelensky, who question why we should be backing the war in Ukraine. And it kind of goes back and you go back two or three steps and then you will see people who are confirmed misinformation agents of Russia. Some of them are Irish. some of them are American, some of them are British. And then you started going more into the protests and you started to see the household names of the alt-right, for many words, Steve Bannon, Tommy Robinson in the UK, coming in and giving us their definitive opinion on why, in their opinion, revolution is happening in Ireland. Now, those of us who are here, it wasn't a pleasant couple of days. It was very challenging politically. The people who found themselves in the protests, the vast majority, were very aggrieved. But it wasn't a revolution. The state wasn't crumbling. There was disruption over a period of time, and we're now relatively back to normal. The same way the night of the Dublin riots was awful, but it was a night. And if you compare it to events that happen on a daily basis in the likes of Paris or London or big cities, they're relatively minor.
But they're not events that we see in Ireland. And that's, I think, why they felt like, as you say, the word that was used, revolutionary. But it did feel exceptional to see that in Ireland. It did feel major.
And they were major. And that's not for an instant to dismiss the events in themselves. It's just the way that they've been latched on by outside forces to portray Ireland as something perhaps that all of us who are living here go like, well, that's not the Ireland we recognise. That's not the debate we're having.
I'm still not quite sure what you're warning against, though. I'm still not quite sure why this is something we should be worried about.
Well, I give you one example. What we see online isn't necessarily the representation of the truth. This week, European Movement brought out the comprehensive polling on Ireland's views on the EU. And it shows that 82% of Irish people want us to remain in the EU. No big news to anyone who follows, statistically, Irish politics. But yet we have online pages saying the majority of Irish people want to leave the EU. Click here for Ireland to leave the EU. Now you can go back to the trace of these pages and they go back to the UK. Years ago, I would have got in a bit of a row online with Leave EU, leave.eu. It was Aaron Banks' website who tried to re-register their domain when the UK left the EU in Waterford. And all of a sudden you see that all these outside Brexiteer forces wanted to pick on Ireland because it's accessible. It's English speaking. It's part of the social media domain. We have all the tech companies here. We have for a small country, we can be very easily played into the British or American political narratives. But within that, and why I mentioned that thing about Ukraine, we've seen in other EU member states when there has been issues of disturbance, and it could be the Gilets Jaunes and whatever comes out next, there are disinformation agents who go and use this as a divisive wedge.
So your big fear is that these outside agents, in order to increase their own profiles, push their own narratives, are sort of amplifying issues in this country. Is that what you're saying?
We saw people who are involved in the fuel protests giving vox pops, interviews, appearing on social media with American and British online agents who are part of this. And they were perhaps didn't know who these people are, because they're not necessarily, okay, Steve Bannon's a household name, but who are the other people that are coming over here and posting on social media about what's going on in Ireland, or coming over and reporting? We see incidents of clear fake news, people saying that there was racist attacks in Connolly train station, which was completely disproved. But my big concern is something is said online and it populates quickly. It goes through the kind of the WhatsApp groups, it goes across the Facebook groups, it goes through the pages, and people zone in on that and think that that's an actuality, when really we see people are taking isolated incidences and repackaging them as part of a misinformation project.
The Irish have had enough. We've had enough. We're a strong nation. We are a tough people. And we want to see change, and we're sick of seeing no change. And this is the time for us all to stand together. Get up off your arses. Get out and protest.
To come to you, Aidan, we mentioned some names there. Steve Bannon, Tommy Robinson. People will be familiar with those individuals. Who else are the players here that you're seeing?
Well, firstly, I'd say we do have our own very vibrant, homegrown, organic disinformation economy in Ireland these days. The outrage economy is just what we're referring to as. What happened with the fuel protests is we saw that the moment the protests, video of the protests emerged, our own disinformation operatives, usually using monetized and algorithmic accounts, immediately jumped on it and started spreading. And then almost virtually instantaneously, because that's how well connected they are to the broader disinformation ecosystem out there, those videos were then ripped and taken by people like Tommy Robinson. But for example, then the big guys started getting involved.
But Ireland is even worse than the UK by some measures. So Tommy's half Irish, but he really is, I think his home base is the UK, which is where you'll be speaking. Right. I didn't know you'd be speaking, and that's amazing. Ireland is still in the European Union, and that means a whole bunch of crazy things, ranging from their obligation to take in mass immigration and asylum seekers to they're part of the European-wide censorship program. Ireland is at war with Elon Musk. Because Ireland is part of the European Union, they get involved with Europe-wide censorship. And Elon Musk is public enemy number one. And by the way, as you know, Elon Musk is now helping Tommy by covering his legal fees.
Alex Jones, who has turned his information into a multi-million dollar industry, made two or three videos about the protest. And then Jack Posick, who runs a website called Human Events, it's an ultra-conservative conspiracy-peddling outlet, sent his brother Kevin over to visit. To give you a bit of background on Jack Posick, Jack Posick is responsible for something called Pizzagate, the allegation that members of the Clinton administration were sexually abusing children in the non-existent basement of a pizza restaurant in D.C. He was instrumental in fermenting the January 6th riot. He's very well linked to the Trump administration. He is the person responsible for claiming that Haitians were eating their pets in Ohio during the presidential election in 2024. Those claims were repeated by both J.D. Vance and President Trump in a debate. So we are seeing this enormous attention coming to Ireland from these American actors. And I don't think it's accidental, and I don't think it's coincidental. Ireland, for starts, is a very tempting target for them. It's English-speaking. They have a very romanticized view of Ireland in the American psyche, that Ireland's a sort of pastoral, sort of quaint, idyllic. So it's the notion that Ireland is being taken over or being invaded is very evocative. So that's one of the key things. And what we saw, as Neil said, was immediately they would take the videos of the field protest, but they would add their own spin to it, that this protest was about net zero, that this protest was about EU migration, that entire towns and cities were rising up, that the EU army had been called in, that protesters' bank accounts had been frozen. More and more outrageous and astonishing claims, because again, it is the outrage economy. If it bleeds, it leads, is how social media works these days. These people want to get the most dynamic, the most controversial, the most sensational claim out there, but they have an agenda behind it. And we're seeing now is both the Trump administration and the Russian government both view the EU now as a threat. And stability of EU democracy is a threat. We've seen repeated statements from the US State Department, from members of the Trump administration, going forward and saying that we view EU stability and the regulation of tech companies as a threat to American democracy and American free speech. And we have these influencers who are heavily tied to these governments now coming and promoting the exact same message. As Neil said, we have anti-Ukrainian message. It's very obvious that the messages about Ukrainian support and trying to strip away support and public confidence in the Ukrainian war is a huge deal for the Russians, and is a very obvious narrative to try and strip away supports from the Ukraine is clearly for the Russians' advantage.
But couldn't you argue, Neil, that the government has fed that themselves with the massive changes they've brought into the accommodation that they're going to provide for Ukrainians?
I think this is where the crux of the issue is. If the government alters, say, in relation to Ukraine, what we're providing, it's being lost in the context. What was initially offered at the very outbreak of the war was the most generous package in Europe. Over 124,000 Ukrainians were warmly welcomed here. But as the conflict has gone on, the EU-wide policy has been to tailor supports and wind them down for a couple of reasons. The Ukrainian government want people to return back actively. Secondly, it's to provide that equality so people weren't moving to the best destination. A lot of Ukrainians have done very well, thankfully, coming over here. Maybe they were working for multinationals anyway. What was required at the start of the conflict simply isn't as required at this stage. So that is a factuality of what's happening. But it's very easy to...
I don't want to get into the debate on that today.
No,
that's not what we're discussing. And there's plenty who would say, actually, it hasn't changed in Ukraine. And actually, it's not that they're in a position to go back now. But I think that conversation's for another day, but it's just worth making.
And I totally accept that. But I do think that is something that all of a sudden, changing the supports that you're given, we're not getting rid of the directive that allows Ukrainians come here, we're not cutting our funding, that is being viewed somehow as we're pulling all support from Ukraine, which isn't the case. And when we talk about Russian disinformation, this isn't unique to Ireland in particular. Two strands of my work sees me travel a lot. One is to the United States, largely where I deal with our diaspora. Secondly is to the Global South, Africa. business international development. And Russia has a really strong influence in Africa. We hear of Wagner Group, Africa Corps, but we can see very clearly that they're also playing a part in certain campaigns, say in Uganda, where homosexuality is illegal. They're now starting a new campaign to pull back women's right to choose. This isn't necessarily something that is the big issue in Uganda, but it plays very much into this. Europe is a threat. How do we unwind European values? And in the US, we're seeing USAID was abolished by the Trump administration. And then we see a very strong part, and this is where I go to the point, of Irish America. It's quite different than what we are today. They're fourth, fifth generation. They are Trump voters. They're far more conservative. And they have a view of that Ireland is, to the point Ireland is being taken over and becoming Europeanised, and how do we push back? It's like in the UK where we have reform saying we need to go back to the good old days.
Where's the actual evidence, right, online conversation, Aidan, is actually changing political behaviour here in Ireland rather than just dominating people's social media timelines or their platforms for a couple of days?
Well, for example, back in 2022, a colleague of mine noticed the concept of the Great Replacement, a conspiracy theory that the white population of Ireland is being replaced intentionally. A version of that appeared in Ireland called Ireland is Full, The Plantation. About 2 years later, a poll by the Electoral Commission revealed that a quarter to one-fifth of Irish voters believed a version of the Great Replacement theory. So it is jumping from social media to the mainstream. We do genuinely see a lot of, as I said, the Overton window, which is sort of where the where acceptable discussion lies, gets pulled in one direction to the right by this conversation. And politicians, where they may not be politically successful in gaining office and gaining power, they do have power and effect to change the political conversation and change the political conversation in a right further to the right.
We have two by-elections coming up in the next couple of weeks. Do you worry at all about those?
I do, because certain candidates, and I'm not going to get into the names, have very deliberately used that sort of language and rhetoric around migration that has clearly been plucked from other jurisdictions. You can see that on the campaign trail, they've made statements of it. But secondly, whatever the results of the by-elections are, and I obviously fundamentally believe my candidates will win, and I'm director of elections and won.
I think you're about the only one that thinks that, to be honest, Minister. But again, that's a different conversation.
I know, a different conversation. But the point to make is that they are challenging for government. So how are those results portrayed? When the results come in, there will be outside influencers who say this is proof that Ireland is moving X, Y or Z. But certainly where I've noticed it twofold. One, there's been comments made in the Dáil in this term that, look, I'm working in politics close to 20 years. I would have never heard before. And it's being used.
Like what?
The usual thing that, you know, Ireland is full, Irish jobs for Irish people, people coming over here, benefits scroungers. And then we would have got it at the end of the COVID-19 pandemic, an element of that conspiracy theory about vaccines started to enter in. And I'm not going to mention the TDs that are saying it, but it's said and it's not pushed back against, and that's on the likes of me who don't instantly push back against, or it's lost in the row and there's a few other discussions. But where I'm really worried about it is I spend a lot of time going out to secondary schools, transition year, fourth year, and, you know, any questions. And certainly from the US presidential election on, the questions were very Americanized. And they were like, are you not worried about Kamala Harris being president, given to all the theories that are out there? And then increasingly hear like, well, I've done my own research. And that's usually a big warning. And what's with the WHO and mandatory vaccines? I don't want to put something in my body that I don't know anything about. And these are 15, 16, 17-year-old children. And where are they consuming their media? Where are they consuming their social media? And that's what's coming into their timeline. You know, two women of a certain age came to my clinic really worried about the WHO vaccine theory. I had to ask, like, where did you read about this? And I was like, well, it was posted into a Facebook group that I'm in about gardening. And this is how it's coming in. It's the benign interest. And certainly during kind of COVID led to the fuel protests, where the role of WhatsApp groups in particular, the army are on the street. So we saw that at the start of COVID, you know, the army on the street supposedly, and turns out it was an old video, or it was in a video from 4 years ago, or there's riots in Balbriggan and it's an isolated incident from 6 years ago, or indeed the defence forces are simply moving machinery and people are saying that's the army being turned on the people. And that was a constant refrain. And we see that with politicians, you're turning the army on the people, when that was never actually done. Their help was sought to engage to move vehicles, two large vehicles. That was it. But that was taken up by outside actors who are saying they've turned the army on the people because they want to portray Europe more broadly. And Ireland is the easiest target because of being English speaking and our political location, our geographic location, is that it's somehow anti-free speech. It's, you know, this agenda that goes against traditional rights, and it's counter to their very clear political ideology.
Is there a danger here that it's just too easy for politicians, I suppose, to frame all of this as, you know, public actors or foreign actors, outside interferers, for what is actual real public frustration at times in Ireland and real public anger over certain issues?
I think there is legitimate grievances and frustration and upset among the fuel protesters. I think that's been acknowledged. The problem we have is that disinformation will always breed during times of social unrest, during times of social inequality, during times where social justice is absent. For people to fight back against disinformation, for people to believe that their government is working for them, they need to see their government working for them. They need to see their government actively, proactively. So it's not enough just to say, yes, this is foreign actors. There also needs to be actual real reform and actual real evidence of government working for them. It would be naive of anyone to say this is all completely a foreign influence thing, and we should reject that. But I don't think acknowledging it's there and acknowledging the underlying reasons which created the protest in the first place has to be done as well.
I know you've concerns, Neil, about the EU presidency and protests around that presidency and this influence. What are those concerns? What are you expecting to see?
Well, I expect protests during the presidency. We had May Day riots in 2004. We had farmers pouring out slurry at the feet of Ivan Yates in the 90s when he was agriculture minister. I expect protests. Protests, by the way, I have no issue with protests. That's part of a free and fair democracy. And I'm not going to blame any outside influence on my failings as a politician or use it as an excuse. What we do have to be able to separate is when they are being used from outside sources and be able to challenge that as part of the political discourse and say there is a rightful grievance. We're having an EU agriculture meeting. There's a rightful grievance that farmers don't feel that they're getting their fair share or they want to talk about a particular directive, and we'll have that discussion. But by the way, this has actually got nothing to do with migration, and this has got nothing to do with the replacement theory. And we have to be able to point that out, and we have to be ambitious enough that every presidency has protests. There will be high security. It's a great opportunity every 13 years to bring every European leader to the country. But we also have to be cognizant that we need to, I suppose, engage in the debate. And this is my challenge. And this is where I say the canary in the coal mine isn't necessarily for people who are listening and going like, well, you know what, I'm pretty annoyed about the price of petrol. That's not for them. It's for the likes of me who think we can ignore this or just say we can just give out about it and complain about it. If you're complaining, you're losing. We need to be able to take it on and say this presidency is a huge opportunity. If people have real concerns, let's bring them into the discussion. Let's bring them into the debate. Let's show them what we're doing. Let's show them how we're working for them. If they don't like what we're doing, fine. But let's not try and isolate them, dismiss them, and then provide ample fodder for what are very clear outside influences from the alt-right in America and from Russian influence, because Russia will target Ireland through the presidency. They are already targeting us. That's just what they do, and it's part of their hybrid warfare campaign against Europe.
What could be done about it?
Better social media regulation, which is enforcing the rules that we actually have. For example, there is a Russian disinformation operative from Ireland who has a monetized account on many social media platforms. That's a violation of international sanctions and international law, but we can't get that account taken down at the moment. I have colleagues who've been trying to get Russian disinformation accounts demonetized, and the platforms aren't taking them down. So really actually challenging and holding the platforms accountable, feet to the fire, it needs to happen. One of the frustrating things about my job is I spent an awful lot of time in developing investigations into social media platforms, figuring out whether they're complying with EU law, and they're not. There's a massive volume of evidence out there sitting at the desk of the European Commission. We're just waiting for them to act and actually start enforcing the Digital Service Act and holding the platforms to account.
Neil and Aidan, thanks so much for being here on News Talk Daily. So what do you think? Do we need to call out these foreign actors? Do we need to be more wary of the influence they could have here in Ireland? Drop me an email, newstalkdaily@newstalk.com, or follow me on Instagram. My handle is @officialKieraD. I'd love to hear from you there. Until tomorrow morning, take care. Bye-bye.